Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It is good to be surrounded by good people. It is even better when those good people are amazing at their job, because then you get to hang out with cool folks and get smarter. That certainly applies to Tom Haberstroh. This dude's so bright, it's like he needs to tamp it down a little bit. Like, just, you could be smarter than us. Just maybe, like, bring it down 30% so we feel better about ourselves. He is on the old Twitter machine of Tom Haberstroh. He's on the show. Tom, is this new, your avatar? I'm the guy that, like, sees avatars. I once said this to Howard Beck, and he's like, that's been my avatar for 3 years. This all white above you, bleached out, is that new, or is that old thing?
I think I've had it for a few months.
I like it.
But look, man, I'm not here to, you know, I'm not expecting you to know the day that I change my avatar on Twitter. So you're off the hook.
Did you hang up? Ryder, I'm not doing this segment anymore. National NBA insider and a man who has an amazing podcast, and it's better named than even this show, the Haberstroh podcast, because get it, his last name's Haberstroh. It's amazing. Mr. Haberstroh, would you like to get on the Suns bandwagon with me? Do you want to jump on this Suns top four bandwagon, or are you still feeling pretty good that they'll recede to a place where they're not quite there?
Oh, man, they're looking fantastic. I love the makeup of this team. You know, Chris Paul is as efficient as ever. He's a killer in the mid-range. It's so funny when we talk about, you know, the mid-range game is dead. You look at Chris Paul, and he's shooting 51% in the long mid-range and 50% in short mid-range. I mean, he's just so money in that spot. Devin Booker's been really good. You know, he's not putting up the same numbers as you might expect, but he has to share the ball with one of the most ball-dominant players in the league. And then Mikal Bridges is such a talented role player, defender, 3-and-D guy. I just love the makeup of this team. And if DeAndre Ayton can continue making strides as a defender, I'm on that bandwagon. I'm not quite there yet in terms of top four in the Western Conference at the end of the season, but, man, they've been really good this year.
Tom Haberstroh here on the show. Tom, the Jazz are playing at an incredible level, and I'd love to hear if you would see them right now as the best team in the NBA, or that's getting a little bit ahead of things. But I'm also just fascinated by Mike Conley and what he was last year versus what he was this year. Whether it's him or other pieces of that team, what are you seeing in Utah that, to your mind's eye, has led to a pretty impressive start of the season?
Who's the best three-point shooting team in the NBA? It's tough, right? Like, off the top of your head, you probably don't say it's the Utah Jazz, but it is. The Utah Jazz.
I only was going to guess it because you asked me. I'm like, it's got to be Utah, right? And I'm like, I'm not going to answer because it could be a trick question.
And they're taking more three-pointers than any team in the NBA. That right there is the reason why they are the best team record-wise in the NBA. They've taken real strides by enabling their elite three-point shooters, and they have a lot of them, to shoot at a high volume. They're like the Houston Rockets, but in Salt Lake City. It's really odd because you look at Rudy Gobert, who has the range, you know, of a two-year-old standing around the basket. He is setting these screens and diving to the rim, and then they have four shooters out deep on the perimeter, and they're shooting at a ridiculous clip. You know, that was the key to them becoming an elite team and that top-tier title contender is their offense. This year, they have the fourth-best offense in the NBA, and it's been catapulted by the fact that they are shooting an amazing job from deep. And it's not just one player. Like, it's not like Donovan Mitchell turned into Damian Lillard and Steph Curry. It's that collectively, the rising tide is floating all boats. Jordan Clarkson shooting a ridiculous percentage. Joe Ingles, Mike Conley, Bojan Bogdanovic. All of these role players and like really good players are shooting a ridiculous percentage from downtown. And you might say, hey, that's not sustainable. Come on, it's the Utah Jazz. But guess what? They had the best three-point field goal percentage last year, last season. The only difference is that Quinn Snyder, the head coach, is like, hey, if we're the best three-point shooting team in the NBA by field goal percentage, why don't we take more of them? And this is what's happening, is everyone's looking at this Utah Jazz team fully empowered and realizing, hey, no one's going to stop us if we have Rudy Gobert as a defensive player of the year and just bombing away from downtown like we're a bunch of Steph Currys out here. It's been amazing to watch, and I think Quinn Snyder definitely deserves consideration for coach of the year for what he's done offensively.
Tom, how many, and I know this question is tricky about how many Western Conference teams do you think are viable contenders to make the finals, because there's this great big roadblock named LeBron James, but you know, taking that into account, how many championship level, contending level teams would you count right now in the Western Conference?
I think there are three. It's Utah, the Lakers, and the Clippers. And then there's a big drop off from there. Denver needs to really shore up their defense. They waxed the Cleveland Cavaliers last night, but you know everyone can wax the Cleveland Cavaliers these days. I think there's three teams in the Western Conference, and there's a couple in the Eastern Conference that, you know, I think Philly has achieved that status. They play amazing on both ends of the floor. Joel Embiid is a legit MVP candidate. Giannis Antetokounmpo and Milwaukee are still right there. And the team I'm still not sold on are the Brooklyn Nets. I have been on this program talking about how I'm not buying the Brooklyn Nets defense, and I was really early on this. As soon as the trade happened, I pegged them as fifth in the power rankings in the Eastern Conference, and people were just beside themselves at the idea that Brooklyn Nets aren't a championship contender or even a top four team in the East. But the defense has been atrocious. Last night they had a really good night, but more – a larger sample size is they are atrocious defensively. And I really do think that this is a team that could have a real early flame out in the playoffs because of the fact that their defense is so porous. I know the offense is crazy good, but that is diminishing returns. You know, like how many ball dominant stars do you need to have an elite offense? Once you have James Harden and Kevin Durant, I don't think you need a Kyrie Irving. I think you need an elite defender, and they just don't have any of that on the roster right now. And I think when you talk about title contenders, there's three in the Western Conference and there's two-ish in the Eastern Conference until the Brooklyn Nets upgrade defensively.
I'm 100% with you on the Nets, and I would go much, much further and say no one needs Kyrie Irving, but that is a different topic for a different day. I just want to get that shot in. Tom Haverstraw here on the show. Tom, something interesting about Philly, and I'm curious your read on this, your perspective. Last year with the Clippers, that Doc Rivers Clippers team, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, but I think they were fifth or sixth or seventh. They were certainly in the top 10 in three-point shooting percentage, but middle of the pack in terms of how many threes they took per game. Doc is now with the Sixers. Daryl Morey is in charge. I think there was certainly a reasonable presumption from me and other people that they might shoot more three-point shots if they could find the people to do that. They're middle of the pack right now in three-point shooting percentage at 15th, but they take among the fewest three-point shots in the NBA. Now, it's working. They're playing really well. Is that just a Doc Rivers philosophy problem or reality? Is that something that's adjustable? Can you just help me make sense of it?
Yeah, so they just acquired in the offseason one of the best three-point shooters of all time, Seth Curry. Not Steph Curry. He's great, too. One of the best of all time, if not the best. But Seth Curry is, percentage-wise, right up there, top five in NBA history in three-point field goal percentage. Right now he's shooting 51% from deep. That was a huge acquisition for them. Danny Green, also a huge acquisition for them. I'm really curious, though. You know, you're right. You're right on the money. 27th in free throw in a three-point rate as a percentage of their overall field goals. That is not what I would suspect from a Daryl Morey team. Daryl Morey, the GM of the 76ers, just came from Houston where they were breaking records for three-pointers left and right. So it is curious. But, of course, Daryl Morey is not the head coach. It's Doc Rivers. And, you know, I think the first half of the season, I think Doc Rivers' primary priority is making sure that Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are happy, that they're eating, that they're getting the looks that they want. And then I think the next phase of this is trying to expand their offense and building off of that foundation. You get those two stars happy, and then you start to really build on that foundation. So I suspect that with Seth Curry being out with COVID protocols, and then coming back and trying to get his conditioning back, I think you're going to see that three-point rate start to skyrocket as the second half of the season approaches, simply because I think everyone's more familiar with each other. And now that Joel Embiid is an MVP candidate, I think they're going to make other teams capitalize on other teams focusing on Embiid and then just rain from downtown. I expect that number to climb. It's a great observation by you, Mr. Bill Ryder.
It's a great answer, too, because I didn't have a good one. I love that. Tom Haverstraw here on the show. MVP, it's early. It's not time to vote yet. I know that. I get it. But we are well past that. What are we at the 25-game mark now? We're in that range or beyond. So there's enough of a sample size that we're not looking at seven games like I did in 2010 with the Heat to Tim Donovan's great joy and making broad proclamations. God, it's my favorite stories. There's enough data here to sort of make educated guesses about what we're seeing. So for you, what would an MVP ballot look like right now?
Yeah, so my number one pick right now is Nikola Jokic is the MVP. And I know if you're looking at the standings, 13-11, Denver Nuggets, you're picking an MVP from that. But he's been that good. I mean, he's outrageously good. He's averaging 27 points, 9 assists, 11 rebounds. He's shooting 56% from the floor, 40% from three, and 85% from the free throw line. I mean, he is outrageously effective. And, you know, defensively, he's been better than what I think his reputation suggests. And so when you look at his numbers, the number one PER in the NBA, his just on-court, off-court metrics, he's been sensational for Denver. And I think with a little bit of better luck in late-game situations, they're better. And I think that Denver's probably going to improve as the season goes on, and I think so will the Joker's MVP candidacy. Joel Embiid is number two. LeBron is number three. Then you have Kawhi Leonard and Stephen Curry rounding out that top five. Kevin Durant, if he plays more, I think he's going to get in that conversation too. He's been sensational this year. So many good candidates for MVP. It's just you're splitting hairs at this point. But for me, Nikola Jokic is so good this year. He's the story of the season in my book. I think he's right now the front runner for MVP.
Tom Haverstraw here on the program. I'm Bill Ryder, CBS Sports Radio's Ryder than you. Tom, I don't want to presume that the NBA has been as wise as they should have been the last 10 years. So I'll ask the question this way. Is there an MVP vote, a number one vote that you have filled out that you regret or regret you would have had if you didn't have a vote but should have over the last 10 years? When you look back at the last 10 years, is there a person that you had either on a ballot or you would have if you'd had a vote that year as the number one MVP in the league that in retrospect, you wish you had voted differently?
It's a great question. I can't think of one off the top of my head here, but I will say that in retrospect, you and I were living one of the craziest MVP votes in NBA history. Is Derrick Rose in 2011 won MVP, where all the metrics, all the numbers pointed to someone else, LeBron James or Dwight Howard. But LeBron James wasn't going to win MVP in a year where everyone was so disgusted at the move of him switching teams to Miami and then just all of the scrutiny that came with that season. It really is amazing to look at the numbers, you know, looking back a decade later at how the voting was not reflective of the actual production. And I think it was more so that people didn't understand what made that Chicago Bulls team so great was the defense. Joakim Noah, Omer Asik, like the defense that the Taj Gibson, the defense that they had on that team was outrageous. And Tom Thibodeau just built an absolute powerhouse defensively. And that was the reason why they had 60 games. Like Derrick Rose was incredible. But in terms of value, I think it was more the defense than it was Derrick Rose. And I know that's heresy in Chicago. But I think when you look back at the MVP ballots over the past decade, I think that one stands out as the most controversial, especially when you consider that Dwight Howard has had just a real fall from grace with his back surgery in L.A. But that season, 2010, 2011, Derrick Rose, Dwight Howard, and LeBron, I think we're going to look back and wonder, did we get that right?
Tom Haberstroh here on the show. It's interesting, Tom, because I'm sure that there are turning points where the numbers that are used to make assessments about these votes go from being an afterthought or not the thought that it really should be to the driving force. And I mean, for me, I remember in baseball, because I lived there, I was writing a lot of baseball the year before I switched over to the NBA, Zach Greinke, I think that was 2009, where he won the Cy Young Award, but it was still at a time where people were horrified that he didn't win 20 games, right? I think he was 16-8 or 16-7 or whatever it was. Do you think the Derrick Rose vote could have been a turning point? Not a turning point that actually allowed the analytics to win the day, but that maybe in retrospect has convinced a lot more voters that this is an important part of how we evaluate players.
Oh, it's such a great point about Greinke, because in the NBA, it's team wins, right?
Right.
Are the driving factor of who wins MVP. Look at Giannis Antetokounmpo last year. Milwaukee Bucks won a crazy number of games. Giannis wins the MVP. For so long, Bill, the orthodoxy of like NBA journalism, the reporters, their vote primarily was, hey, who has the best team? Who's the best player on that best team? And then go vote that way. And I think that shift is happening, where I think a lot more people are open-minded to the idea of like a Nikola Jokic being an MVP or a Stephen Curry being an MVP this season, even though the team hasn't been performing outrageously well, because now we have on-court, off-court numbers where we see the Golden State Warriors, how they perform when Steph is on the bench, and it's just awful. And same argument could be made for Joel Embiid. When he goes to the bench, the 76ers are nowhere near the same team. So I think we're just becoming a little bit more nuanced. And so it's not so much the team standings like it is in baseball, where you see, hey, how many pitcher wins does that guy have? That's the Cy Young. Now I think you're seeing a similar shift in the NBA thinking, where because we have more available measurements and more accurate measurements of player value, we're no longer in the Stone Age of saying, okay, who has the most wins? Who's the best player on that team? And I think we're better for it.
Tom Haberstroh on the show. Tom, I mentioned earlier in the program that a year and a half ago, I bet on the Jazz to win an NBA championship at, I think, 16 or 20 to 1. And I was a year ahead of schedule. And I'm dumb. And I need to stop betting on sports in general. We need to use big brains to direct our gambling instincts. And that is why I am proud to share with America that they can look to you instead. I'm going to look to you to give us some insight. What's the give us the big number bets part of what you'll be doing, and how people can get on that info to make some cash, hopefully.
Yeah, so on my Twitter feed, at Tom Haberstroh, I'm putting out a new newsletter called Big Number Bets, which is going to be my weekly look at Wednesday night games, making three picks based on the data, what the analytics are telling me and what people are telling me around the league is just certain trends or what I'm hearing about player value. And so I'm now doing a newsletter every Wednesday morning. Sign up, Big Number Bets. You can find it at Tom Haberstroh on my Twitter, and you'll get in your inbox three picks from my brain. Last night, my picks went 2-1, Paul Millsap, Ja Morant, and Trae Young. Trae Young, I'm just very upset at him. He got more rebounds than I thought he would. It's such an aberration. But anyway,
that's obnoxious of him. That's obnoxious of Trae Young.
I know. I mean, and the gall on him to do it before halftime. Like, he ruined my bet by halftime. So it was just an embarrassing showing for me. But Paul Millsap, Ja Morant came through for me. So I'm 2-1. It's early, but every week, Wednesday, I'm going to put out a new newsletter with my picks. We'll see how it goes. But I'm expecting to be very humbled like you were last year with the Utah Jazz. By the way, I don't think that was a bad pick. If Mike Conley's shot goes in, that is maybe a really smart pick there with all that value on the Utah Jazz.
To be fair with me in gambling, any pick I make can't be smart in the long run, because it's just heartbreak. Tom, you don't even care about this, but I'm going to tell you, had the Chiefs covered, I would have won 10 grand. And like an idiot, I didn't even like hedge. I'm like, whatever, the Chiefs are going to win. So even when I'm smart, I'm dumb. When you're smart, you're just smart, because you're Tom Haberstroh, at Tom Haberstroh on Twitter. Dude, I love having you on the show. I appreciate you, buddy. Thanks for making time.
You got it, Bill. Hang in there, buddy. It's been a tough few days, but if I could, I'd hug you through this phone right here, because we all need it right now. So hang in there, Bill.
Thanks, buddy. Don't make me cry again. I appreciate you. Thank you, Tom.